I feel like it's gone by in a flash now that we're here. And I feel like it was a slog, but a great slog. You know, it's been tough, hard work, but I'm so grateful to be part of it and really proud of this film.
That was Daisy Ridley from the latest Star, or the last, apparently, of this series, Star Wars episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker. And
Neil, you are my son.
That's Bill McCuddy. Who's calling in this week as Bill Bregoli. Hello, Bill Bregoli.
Hi.
And I, Neil Rosen, sit in 20-something degree New York with the 10-degree wind chill. And Bill is in sunny, are you in Miami? Miami Beach?
I am in Miami Beach, Cabana Beach. Side. Lydia, throw a robe on. You're going to catch your
death. Miami Beach, you bastard. You're sitting in 80-degree weather while we're freezing up here. Anyway, so here's the deal on Star Wars. You know, this is directed by and written by J.J. Abrams. Co-written by J.J. Abrams, Bregoli?
Co-written by
J.J. Abrams, who took over the franchise, you know.
When they took it away from someone else.
When they took it away from George Lucas, which after the... So basically the way it worked is this, is the first episode back in 1977 was episode 4, and that was, you know, so Lucas did 4, 5, and 6, and I think the gold standard is still the episode 5, which is The Empire Strikes Back. And the first one, for originality, gets a lot of points. And Return of the Jedi is okay. And then everybody there was a big hiatus for like 15 years or 20 years or something. And then he came back with episodes 1, 2, and 3. That's the one with the notorious Jar Jar Binks. And those were awful. So they took the series away from him.
Please tell me Jar Jar Binks meets a terrible demise in this one. And by the way, I'm asking that question because we're playing our age-old. Bill hasn't seen it, and because these guys went to the huge splashy premiere the other day.
Well, we didn't go to a huge splashy premiere.
No, I had to wait out in the rain.
Yeah, we went to a screening.
It was terrible.
It was not.
But you were at the all medias that the stars go to because they only show it once, right?
Nope. They had two showings that day, and
Bill went to the morning screening, and I went to the evening screening.
And it was at the SVA Theater on 23rd Street, which doesn't mean anything to anyone listening, but to us means terrible sight lines, but a big screen.
Yeah, so, and not even like, I used to see these at the Ziegfeld when that theater was around. This is kind of like not that big of a screen.
Okay, so, Grandpa, but the point is, you guys are going to try and talk me okay. into going to see it.
Well,
so
you know, here's the thing. It's getting killed by... not killed. I'd say it's getting mixed to negative reviews by critics. I am not like Bill McCuddy is a huge 007 fan, and he can't wait for these movies to come out. And you know, okay, that's your thing, and that's fine. I like those movies as well, but he's like a fanboy on that. I'm not a fanboy on Star Wars. I mean, I've seen every one of these things going back to 1977, as well as those standalone movies that they've came out. I think we all have. How does this rank?
Kind of your job.
How does this rank with the other ones? You know, as Bill Bregoli said, you know, it checks off all the boxes. It's like they didn't have a Death Star in it. They didn't have a bar scene. But other than that, you know, there's lightsaber duels. There's Millennium Falcon space fights, you know. And
new droids, old droids, fuzzy creatures.
Yes. It's you know, they just like it's like I said when J.J. Abrams did the first one. It's like they sat down with a blueprint for Star Wars and said, okay, we've got to put this in. Audiences like this. We'll put that in. You know, I like Daisy Ridley as Rey. I mean, she carries the whole movie. She's really the movie. There is a plot here.
So
I mean,
women will be happy because she was strong in the last one and she continues to be strong in this one. But she's done. Her character arc is over.
Well,
maybe not.
I don't know. They say that this is
could
the...
Could they spin a movie just off of her?
Yeah, they could.
Yeah,
they could easily. Cause,
yeah, look, a lot of people, I don't want to spoil the movie, but yes, you could do a Rey Daisy Ridley movie, but you couldn't, listen, in the Star Wars universe, people die, they come back, they're revived, you can do anything. They're saying that this is the last, this is the conclusion to the 9-episode trilogy
Skywalker saga.
That started 42 years ago, the Skywalker saga. Thank you, Bill Bregoli. You know, look, there is a plot. This guy Palpatine, who's the Emperor, wants to bring Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, over to the dark side. Adam Driver, who we've seen as the son of Darth Vader.
He's getting work.
Yeah. Yeah, he was in his 80th movie this year. He wants to bring Daisy Ridley over to the dark side, the character Rey. And somehow he has this ability to, like, in his mind, just find out wherever she is in the universe and just kind of, like, teleport there, sort of like I Dream of Jeannie, crossing her arms, blinking, and just showing up somewhere. It's kind of weird. And they don't really explain to you how that's...
Idris Elba and Cats, but we'll get there in a moment.
But, you know, look, as not a super fan of the series, but I'm okay with the series. I thought it was fine. There's nothing inspiring about it. It's just kind of like, yeah, here's a 10-minute lightsaber duel. Yeah, here's another thing for... And as, you know, McCuddy, we were talking before we started rolling. Yeah, it starts out, you know, without any kind of explanation. There's just a giant battle, space battle for like 10 minutes with no explanation whatsoever. And Oscar Isaac's running around and, all these people are running around in this thing. I don't know. What do you think, Pergoli?
As I said earlier, it checks all the boxes. I had a feeling that Disney was a little frightful with this one because a lot of the stuff they didn't like in the Last Jedi movie, they cut back on, like Kelly Tran's character. Some racist fanboys said, we don't want an Asian character. We want a girl. And she's back in this one.
So there's nobody gay. There's nobody transgender.
There's a lesbian kiss toward the end.
I missed that.
Yeah.
I missed that.
It was two characters that you barely saw. And at one point, everybody was celebrating. I won't tell you what they were celebrating, but they're celebrating. And there are two females. I don't know if they're both human characters, but they're a female and they do kiss, but the camera pans right by them. But if you're, an old
so
twist.
Before I render my decision, you guys obviously saw it with fanboys. How did it play in the room at either one of those screens?
We didn't see it with fanboys. We saw it with all critics, I think, pretty much. Carrie Fisher is all over this movie, which to me was, I think, technically interesting. I don't really know quite how
technically interesting, but creepy.
I don't know how they did that because she wasn't in the, she died like after the first. Not the first J.J. Abrams
right,
movie.
But they shot a lot of scenes with her intentionally that were going to go into the next movie.
Why? Did they know she was sick or something?
One.
I mean,
and then when she died, I think they took the scenes Bergoli was telling me the other day and sort of rewrote around them. So they had footage of her that was always intended to be in the next adventure, but I think they had to take what they had existing and turn it into something that would make sense for this story.
Well, she's unlike Billy Dee Williams, who's alive and well, and in the movie for maybe 5 minutes total. Carrie Fisher
is wearing a dress.
No, he's not wearing a dress. I know. What is he? He's what was that he came out
with? Gender fluid now, I guess, in every universe.
Well, but Carrie Fisher, she's pretty prominent in the movie, this is not like a 2 second cameo appearance.
She's in there.
She's all throughout the movie,
and then she is.
But do they do a lot of those cheats with her in the back of her head, and it might not be her?
Well, they do that. They do a lot of that Fred McMurray, My Three Sons thing. If you know that show, where like Fred McMurray worked 3 weeks a year on the show, and then recorded everything, and then they just had the back of his head in a chair. So yeah, there was a lot of back of the head of Carrie Fisher with dialogue, but she's pretty prominent from, facially as well. I don't know how they did it. There's a lot of Oscar Isaac. There's a lot of John Boyega. Daisy Ridley. I like Daisy Ridley. Adam Driver all over the movie, as he's all over a million movies this year, I don't know. It's too bad. Perry Nemiroff, who I spoke to about this, she kind of feels, she's really into these movies. She feels similarly to you and I, Bill Bregoli. She goes, yeah, it's perfunctory, it's okay, it's not awful, but it's not like, wow, what an inspiring original thing. It's just kind of like...
they're too afraid to do anything original.
Right, it's Star Wars Greatest Hits, which is what the first episode, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8.
I saw that 2 movies ago when J.J. Abrams rebooted it then. Yeah. So I got to tell you, I'm taking a pass based on everything you've told me.
That's okay. Plenty of other good stuff out there. You'll be fine.
Yeah, if you're a big Star Wars fan, I don't know if you'll be disappointed because I'm not in love. Like, I think the series is okay, but I'm sure they'll pick up. I'm not going to reveal a lot of this stuff because it'll be classified as spoilers, but you could probably say that doesn't make sense, and how could that happen? I think you just got to buy in it and go along for the ride, and you're not going to find any triumph of originality in this thing. But I think they are scared. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Cats. Now, we're going to play the game. I haven't seen Cats, but Bill Bregoli and Bill McCuddy have seen Cats. Which one of you guys wants to begin with Cats? You can decide amongst yourselves.
Listen, I'm in no hurry to do much of an explanation on this thing.
You don't have to. There's no plot.
Well,
it's a bunch of cats singing about themselves. I'll take a lead on it.
Okay, and you do Little Women.
Okay. I was going to say, you do 1917 and I'll do this one.
Right. We're going to talk today about, by the way, Star Wars, Cats, Little Women, 1917, The Song of Names, and a Netflix series with Paul Rudd called Living With Yourself. So, okay, Bill Bregoli, tell us all about Cats.
Cats.
Did it make memories for you?
No, but there are mammaries, but I'll get into that later.
Mammaries.
That's right.
Okay.
Human mammaries covered in fur. It's about a tribe of cats called the Jellicles, who must decide yearly which one will ascend to what's called the Heaviside Layer. And this is all based on T.S. Eliot's Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats,
which was
turned into a musical by Andrew Lloyd Webber, which ran forever on Broadway and was the butt of many jokes by all New York comedians. And there is a plot, but it's mostly cats introducing themselves and singing a song about themselves, and then they get disappeared by Idris Elba's cat character. I will tell you, there is a sort of an ingenue cat. She's played by a woman, thank goodness, called Francesca Haywood, who we haven't seen before because she's actually a ballet dancer and not a singer. But unfortunately,
and I don't think she has a tremendous amount of star power, but she's very good in this. I mean,
she's good at dancing.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
she moves well. Obviously, that would be one of the things that would be a requirement here. But as far as breaking out and being a big star, like, there are some big names in this thing, Idris Elba and James Corden and, of course, Judi Dench. But, like, she's not going to, like, light up the world after this.
How's Taylor Swift?
She's in one scene. She kind of struts around and kind of heaves her cat bosoms. It's weird to, I got to say, Bill, I don't know about you, but it took me a long time to get used to these CGI fur cat people.
They're CGI. I thought they were in costumes.
They are not
in
costumes.
Part of it is CGI. I mean,
they're not costumes.
They're not costumes.
Cat suits. And one thing that I think was manipulated is the cute way their ears kind of go back and forth. But other than that, I think we're looking at pretty much them in their outfits.
No, we're not, Bill. They were in blue suits. I've seen the backs. The behind the scenes are mostly in blue suits.
Really?
Yeah. And there's,
by the way,
so I will say in its favor that's pretty seamless.
Yeah,
that comes off well.
You know, Bill McCuddy always likes to quote Rotten Tomatoes and what the grade is on Rotten Tomatoes. I'd like you to take a guess, unless you've seen it already, and then don't take the guess. What do you think what the rating on Rotten Tomatoes?
I'd guess around 27.
What would you guess, Bill McCuddy?
I would say in the 20s also. I mean, look.
17%.
Yeah. Look, you know what it reminded me of? It's got kind of a dark tint to it. The sets all look like sets. It looked like, and James Corden's in it, so to me it looked like a summer replacement special.
Well.
Where they got like a famous person to like do a summer special.
No, I'm looking at Rotten Tomatoes. Nobody likes this. It's like, and it's it, this is just terrible reviews. Is the big show-stopping memories number done well at least?
I thought it was overdone.
No, I thought that was a big disappointment.
Yeah, it wasn't very good. She's not.
Who sings Memories?
Jennifer Hudson.
Jennifer Hudson sings Memories.
Yeah, and it's...
And Taylor Swift sings a new song.
A new song.
And she's not on the show.
Actually, she sings one of the old songs, but there is a new song that somebody else sings that she co-wrote with Andrew Lloyd Webber, but you barely notice it.
Well, apparently...
I thought she was screeching Jennifer Hudson. I mean,
everybody
who went to the premiere the other night, the Taylor Swift, and there was a big party at Tavern on the Green. Maybe you guys went. I wasn't in town, but...
I was not invited. Were you invited,
Bill
Bregoli?
No.
They said that, like... Everybody got huge rounds of applause the way you would at a Broadway theater when these things happen. And our colleague Roger Friedman is saying now that Jennifer Hudson may get an Oscar nomination out of this thing.
No.
I didn't see anything like that.
Well, the Oscars came out with a short list of their best song nominees. And how does that work? Is it their potential nominees?
Yeah, I think so.
And Taylor Swift.
Yeah, the way they do documentaries, they have a short list so that all the voting members don't have to listen to every song.
Got it.
Every movie.
Well, the Taylor Swift song was not on there, and apparently she's really feels slighted about it.
And they only got one Golden Globe nomination.
Right, and it was for a song as well, and I'm not sure it was Taylor Swift's. It got one Golden Globe nod.
Well,
what I'm told is the Globe people didn't even see the movie. They heard the soundtrack so they could nominate
Rebel.
I'm not sure that's true.
Okay, I'm assuming Rebel Wilson is, from the trailer, is the comic relief.
Actually, the comedian people in it, like Rebel and James Corden, came off fairly well.
But they're both tubby, and they both have the same kind of fat jokes.
Right.
I really only needed one of them. And Rebel's kind of big song at the beginning is kind of creepy. And then
The cockroaches.
James Corden is funny. James Corden comes on, and he's amusing. But I don't remember which character he was in the movie. I mean, in the stage play. But so I don't know whether he's been added or not. I'm guessing not. But he's okay. Look, nobody's going to lose their... It's not going to end anybody's career. It's just that it feels like a summer replacement special with a lot of famous people doing these songs.
A lot of these shows that
and it doesn't look very good. It's tinged in a dark kind of sepia tone, and there's no daylight really in the whole
Are you brought in? Okay, I suffered with although my daughter, who was six at the time, and her niece and our niece, her cousin, wanted to see it, so I went to see it like 20-some-odd years ago, and, you know, I didn't hate the thing, but I certainly wasn't a fan of the thing when I saw it. If you're mediocre on the show, are you going to enjoy the movie?
If
you love the show, are you gonna go like,
they
wow?
They took some liberties with it, from what I understand. I never saw the show, but I will tell you that the screening I saw it at, which was 4 in the afternoon, oddly enough, the crowd was very restless. I mean, people were going to going off to the bathroom during Memories.
Did you see it on Broadway, McCuddy?
I did, but I don't remember anything about it, so I can't. I mean, obviously the big songs I remember, but I can't say, oh, they changed this or they changed
but
that.
But there's no real plot.
To answer your question, it's going to do big money with the people who saw it on stage. They're going to go see it.
I don't agree.
Well,
no. Let me make this point. A lot of these shows that are these really, really long-running shows on Broadway that they don't make into, you know, movies for 20, 30 years, like A Chorus Line with Michael Douglas, or even The Phantom...
That made money and made people happy.
Not the kind of money. It's not like the old days when they take West Side Story or South Pacific and they make a movie out of it and it does unbelievable business. These movies that have been lying around... Even Phantom, even though Anne Hathaway, you know, won an Oscar... And Hugh Jackman was in it. That didn't do blockbuster business.
Chicago did big money.
Chicago was brilliant, but Chicago, I think they improved on the Broadway show. I mean, Chicago was the movie to me was a work of art. Rob Marshall, what he did with Catherine Zeta-Jones and Renee Zellweger and Richard Gere, I thought that was my favorite movie of the year.
Fanboy.
No, that was my favorite movie of the year. I don't think having seen Phantom on Broadway and seeing the movie, I don't think it was that. I don't think it was that radical.
Oh, there's Rob Marshall giving you an eggplant.
I don't think it was that radical of an improvement. You know, I think Chorus Line worked better on stage than it worked on screen. I don't know. I mean, does this work better on screen than it did on stage?
Bill, none of us remember, Neil. Nobody else.
Yeah, I never saw the stage play. I just.
So maybe that speaks to your point about whether it's going to make any dough. But I think it will. There will be some curiosity. Will not kill the cat. I think a lot of people will go in the first couple of days.
Well, Bregoli wrote me and said it's not going to do any business.
Yeah, that's what I think. But we'll see. Maybe a big furball.
Well, if critics have any input, obviously it's. If people listen to critics, it's not going to do any better.
I don't know anybody that wants to see this. Literally, actually,
but I will tell you, my headline is catastrophe or catastrophic or
catatonic.
Well, maybe it'll have nine lives. Maybe it'll die in the theater and then and then live on in streaming and then live on in on HBO or something. Or who the hell knows? I don't know. I have no interest in seeing this. I actually know one person who wants to see it. But she's a big Broadway musical fan. But other than that, most people, you know, you say Cats, the movie, you know, and they go like, oh, God, I don't want to sit through that. So, and it's hard to, you know, remember the fact that when this thing came out on Broadway, like when it first opened, this was a huge, like, hard ticket to get. And, gee, you know, like, it was kind of almost like a Hamilton.
It was Hamilton.
Yeah, it was Hamilton. I can't get tickets. Could anybody get tickets? It was crazy, you know? So, and then it became kind of a joke.
It ran for like 10 years, didn't it?
Yeah, it's now years. The it's now the fourth longest running
ten
Broadway
years.
Show.
It ran for like 20 years, man. It ran
at the Winter Garden Theater for almost forever.
Now and forever.
well, this is now and for never.
Well, we used to work with a guy, Bill McCuddy and I, Tom Farkas, and he was saying that they would give Broadway tours during performances of like Cats. It was like a museum piece. Like they would here's where they have Cats. Oh, they're having a performance right now.
It was a punchline on lots of late night jokes forever, for years and years and years.
I don't know.
Letterman loved making fun of it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. All I remember when I saw the show, not the thing, was the plot was kind of incomprehensible. There was a Jellicoe cat, and there was
a
Gumby cat. And
they're all trying to be Jellicoes now, which is one of our colleagues said, what the fuck's a Jellicoe and why do you want to be one?
By the way, it's never explained.
Never really explained.
Nope. Yeah, well, when you see the show, and let's move on after this, when you saw the show on Broadway, you know, it was more about spectacle. It wasn't about plot. You just buy. Look, if you're buying into the fact that cats are singing and talking, I mean, literally, what kind of? But there was no plot of like one of the cats. It was just songs and just I don't care for it. So okay, so from what you're telling me, I never wanted to see the movie to begin with, and from what you're telling me, you have not convinced me to see it, and you guys don't even like the thing. So
Neil.
Okay, I'm gonna pass. Okay, Little Women, take it away, Bill McCuddy.
Oh, this is Greta Gerwig's take on the famous novel that has been made several other times, but in my opinion, and it's I'm just going to say right up front on my top 10 list, never as well, and maybe one of the best adaptations ever. This is about the three girls who are members of a family and are probably the nicest people on the planet, which is why millennial or current audiences may go, "Who are these people? It's not all rings true to me." But Saoirse Ronan, the great Laura Dern, who we've talked about Marriage Story in podcasts past. I think she's going to win the Oscar for that performance. But I think this performance is going to help her because in a year when you give two great performances, the Academy really likes you. So who's the older actor that Chris Cooper lives next door as the kindly sort of wealthy guy that helps gives one of the girls a piano? Florence Pugh is in this thing, and I just think, you know the story. I think this is one of the best films of the year, and you both have seen it as well, right?
We've all seen it.
I really like Florence Pugh in it.
This is the seventh film adaptation of this movie.
Eighth, I think.
I read seven. Two were silent.
Oh,
movies.
Okay. They don't count.
Right.
Everybody knows Greta Gerwig was my number one 2 years ago for Lady Bird. So,
well, so this is
the... She's living with Noah Baumbach, who did Marriage Story. So they're like the it couple in Hollywood right now.
But they're a New York couple. They are a New York-based couple.
Selling movies are made in Hollywood now.
So as I was saying, you know, it's the seventh adaptation of the classic novel by Louisa May Alcott. I think I've seen four of these things. And what surprised me is that I was like, oh, God, not again. I mean, there's just been so many of these. The Winona Ryder one, the Katharine Hepburn one. What are you going to do? I mean, I know the story. I mean, you know, it's four sisters, towards the end of the Civil War and then post-Civil War that, you know, that are... They're an artistic family. I mean, one's an artist, one's a writer, one's
women didn't get to do much else in those
days. One wanted to be an actress, I think, you know, but she kind of abandoned that.
Well, they want her to be an actress, and then she abandons it.
Right, and you know.
I think everybody knows the story. I'm just...
What I like what Greta Gerwig did, there's a couple of things that I was surprised that she injected new life into this thing. First of all, it's told out of sequence, which some people are complaining about, but I kind of like that. You know, it kind of like starts out...
It didn't bother me, but I had a hard time figuring out what time frame we were in, except when I looked at Saoirse Ronan's hair, because it does dramatically change
length. Well, it starts out, which I kind of liked, is it's in New York, and Saoirse Ronan's character, who's supposed to be like the Louisa May Alcott, is trying to sell her story of Little Women to this publisher, played by Tracy Letts, another guy who's all over the screen.
Who played her dad in Lady Bird.
Right, and who was in Ford, who stole Ford versus Ferrari this year as Henry Ford II. So, you know, it's kind of cool that she's trying to, and it's a really great, you know, if you're a feminist, Lisa Rossman, who does the TV show, which is on this Friday on CUNY TV, by the way.
Oh, boy.
Check that box.
We're going to get away with no plot.
Talking Pictures with Neil Rosen with Bill McCuddy will be in that episode. So anyway, point is, you know, you look at this and you say to yourself, you know, it's a strike for feminism. I mean, which is great. It's a plus for feminism. I mean, it's all these women that don't want to be relegated to just being married or housewives and, you know, cooking and cleaning. I mean, they have careers that they want to do, and they're fighting against the times when that is not really the norm, as you said, Bill Bregoli, for women back in those particular days. And I think that it's got a nice feminine twist on it to take a late 19th century novel.
I think what you're trying to say is it's kind of surprisingly contemporary, even though it
yes,
in so many words,
it wasn't updated. And actually, Greta Gerwig was thinking in one of the script versions of making it a contemporary version, because that's what Hollywood was trying to kind of talk her into, because that's what she knows. That's the world of her indie cred. But I'm glad that they didn't. I want to also mention it looks beautiful, and Timothée Chalamet is really good in it as the guy that falls in love with.
So is the guy who plays. If you're familiar with the book, in New York, she meets. Is he French? I think he's French.
I thought he was Italian. Italian. But who knows? He's dark and swarthy, and all the women in the screening I went to—they're
swooning over this guy. He's very good. I'm sorry, his name escapes me. He's quite good. Everybody's kind of good in this, to be honest.
I think Steve Odenkirk is slightly miscast.
Well,
but
he's not in the movie.
Not in enough of it too.
Well, Steve Odenkirk isn't in the movie, and I don't really know who Steve Odenkirk is, but Bob Odenkirk is in the movie.
Oh, sure, yes.
And playing the father who returns from the preacher father who returns from the Civil War. He kind of took me out of the movie a little bit. I don't know. Maybe it's because of all
there you go.
Break,
so we agree on something.
Yeah, those Breaking Bad episodes.
Is this movie in anybody else's top 10 list?
Might be in mine. I haven't put it together yet.
It would be in my. I like the movie a lot. I don't think it would be in top 10. It might squeeze in there. It certainly would be my honorable mentions, which is our next podcast, by the way. We're doing our best and worst of the year. It's good. I mean, it's good.
Yeah.
For a movie that I really had no interest in seeing, because I've seen so many other versions of this and know the story. My wife loved it. It was her favorite book when she was growing up. She said she doesn't go to a lot of screenings because I want to see Little Women. And she was not disappointed. She was very happy with it. And as you always say, Mrs. McCuddy, did Mrs. McCuddy see Little Women, or your daughter?
No, she and Lily are going to watch it tonight with another friend of theirs here in Miami, another chick. So
I know you
I
have
might actually sit in on that.
I know you have the screener, but I think having seen it in a movie theater, I think this plays better on a big screen. You know,
it's pretty.
It's pretty. I mean, the costumes are great.
Well, we have one of those where I am, so I'm not bragging. It's not my house, but we're
see it. The cinematography is beautiful. The costumes.
Yeah, that's
sets,
what I said.
The whole thing. Yeah, I mean, well done for what it is. If you like this sort of thing,
Does it look as good as 1917?
Nah. Well, Bill Bregoli, who's a World War II and World War I aficionado and his historian to an extent. Why don't you guys?
Well, he served in both of them, so he's got a special
interest. That's right. Actually, when I was growing up in high school, I met a guy who one of my neighbors was an Irish guy who fought during the Boer War.
Well, that's,
which was in the 1800s.
Oh God!
Yeah, that's how old this guy was, but he was cool. Anyway, that kind of sparked my interest in old wars the British people died in. This is about two British privates who, during World War I, are ordered to deliver a message in enemy territory that will stop 1,600 British soldiers from falling into a trap and being killed by the Germans.
It's let's stop Gallipoli from happening, basically.
Something like that. Yeah, well, Gallipoli was somewhere else. But anyway, that's the plot. They're crawling around France. The interesting thing about it, directed by Sam Mendes, is that Roger Deakins and he figured out a way to shoot this movie in what looks like, it isn't, but it looks like one continuous shot.
It's very
immersive, and you should see.
Like Hitchcock's Rope, but there are a couple of times when you know they have.
Yeah.
Well, there's one obvious. There's one, as David Fear, who does the show this week on sitting around talking movies with Neil Rosen,
is
on
Tuesday
this Friday.
Is there a show at all? I've never seen it.
Well, but you know, he said yes. There's one obvious cut where they fade to black, but other than that, I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, how in the world are they doing this?
That's pretty
because
good.
It's like that scene in Goodfellas, which is about 4 or 5 minutes, when Ray Liotta walks in with Lorraine Bracco into the Copacabana,
right.
And the camera follows them from the outside of the Copa through the kitchen, you know, because they don't go in the front door. They go in the back of the kitchen. And it just follows them through the whole thing until they sit down. And it's, you know, at the time, that movie is now 25 years old. It was kind of a triumph of filmmaking. That's really cool. So this is a 2-hour version of that tracking shot. And I'm looking at this going, how the fuck did they do this?
Not only that, but they really make you feel like you're in the middle of a battle, because while they're tracking these guys, you're looking off into the distance and all you see is wrecked stuff, dead cows, airplanes flying around. They basically created a war somewhere to shoot this thing. It's very immersive. It's I really liked it a lot. I was worried that Neil wouldn't like it because this is sort of Dunkirk on dry land. They don't give you a whole lot of
No, but this is a very easy story. I mean, it's like, as you said, it's these two soldiers, one of whom his brother is on the front line. They have to get there through through enemy territory to get this message to the lieutenant to call off the attack, which is a trap.
Right.
You know, it's a very simplistic plot, and it's like, are they going to make it? And they have all these obstacles in their way. I mean, you know, there's a World War I dogfighter who's, you know, like crash lands, and, you know, there's what the hell's going on? There's all these, you know, I like the plot.
Yeah.
You know,
good.
I didn't see it as Dunkirk, but, there's this movie, you know, my wife and I watched it, and then we watched it was a big movie night. Then we watched Richard Jewell, and then we came back to this and watched this Peter Jackson documentary that was called They Shall Not Grow Old, where he digitized this really awful grainy footage, black and white footage from World War I, and made it look like it was shot yesterday. It's a triumph of technical wizardry. And the conditions in that, I mean, it's as if San Mendes looked at this documentary and said, okay, we're going to just duplicate this on the sets and stuff like that. And the conditions in the documentary, the sanitary conditions were just awful. I mean, they were talking about, I mean, I don't want to get graphic about how they used the latrine and all this kind of stuff, but more people died from unsanitary conditions and disease in that, the soldiers from World War I, than died in actual battle. And I highly recommend that if you do see 1917, to follow it up. It's on HBO. You can watch, or it's on one of the pay services or streaming services to watch They Shall Not Grow Old, which I think
is
great.
Well, I'm going to go a step further and say you really only need to see They Shall Not Grow Old. I'm not saying that this isn't a great movie, but I was taken a little out of it by this trick that you describe of the one continuous take. And I'm not sure that it isn't better to actually see the real guys. I went to a party with Sam Mendes the other night, and he did a Q&A. I had a chance to talk to him for a little while, and he never mentioned They Shall Grow Old. And I didn't bring it up either, but he talked about how he's the first person in a long time to do a World War I movie. And, of course, he means a fictitious one. But I think that you don't really need to see them both. You're calling it a double feature, and I'm saying just see the Peter Jackson movie, because this is a beautiful movie to look at, but it's certainly no Paths of Glory in terms of – and I'm a little World War I'd out.
Well, Paths of Glory, as great as that Stanley Kubrick Kirk Douglas movie is, and it is a great movie, you know, Paths of Glory was almost 1960 – so it was almost 60 years ago, and, you know, it was in black and white.
Glorious black and white.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm knocked out on the technical trick that they did here. I think it's a technical marvel. Story's good. The guy who plays one of the two guys
one of the soldiers?
The guy who, I won't give it away. His name is George McKay.
Yeah.
And they're talking about him for getting an Oscar nomination. I thought he was really good. There are stars in this that make appearances for 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Like Colin Firth, Benedict Cumberbatch. They just literally pop up for like 2 minutes in the movie. But yet they get top billing. Benedict Cumberbatch and Colin Firth in 1917.
Everybody knows who they are. Mark Strong's in it and Richard Madden, too.
But you got to give props not only to Sam Mendes, but as you said, to the cinematographer Roger Deakins and the editor.
Yeah.
Lee Smith. I mean, my God, the editing. Look, I saw some, they had a featurette that's online on YouTube.
Right, I saw that.
Which shows you them, you know, video of them filming it. So you can see that they're not doing it in one take. The movie took months to film, but it's, I still don't know how the hell they did this. I mean, they
Mendez talked the other night about happy accidents, because when you have 10-minute long takes and everything depends on the first thing following the second following the third, he said it doesn't always work out. And so some of the things that we don't know as mistakes were mistakes. So one of them is the guy running along the line of soldiers at the end trips twice, and that wasn't in the script, but they kept it in and worked around it. So it's fascinating, and it's really cool that they made it, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure it does that much more than the documentary did. By the way, Mendez said something really interesting the other night, which is that he thinks that a lot of the movies that get made today have the responsibility to be big screen movies, otherwise they would be streaming films. And he said a lot of the films earlier in his career, like Revolutionary Road, would have gone straight to streaming if that had been an option in its day. So he thinks the onus that's on Hollywood is to create movies that need to be seen on a big screen.
Did you see 1917 McCutty on a big screen, or did you see it on the screener that they sent?
No, I saw it on a screener.
I saw it on a screener too, but
I saw it on a big screen the day that my screener arrived.
it's probably better to see it on a big screen,
and it was much better.
Although, you know, it's right in front of you. We have a big television here.
Yeah, you got.
If you dim the lights,
people live in the East Side, but big TVs.
Yeah, but I think to see it, you know, and I've yet, other than, you know, if you live in New York, other than the, I think it's called AMC Lincoln Square now, where they have that one theater with that huge screen. They have a lot of theaters in there that don't have huge screens. Other than that theater, and they used to have the Ziegfeld, which is gone, there's no, they have the IMAX theater in there. There are no real, like, wow, I'm longing for those big, huge screens, which aren't really around that much. And if the people that are Netflix and other studios want you to go to the movies, Netflix doesn't, I think that they should support theaters with, you know, big, if you're going to put like those little theaters in AMC Lincoln Square where the screens aren't that big, well, if you're going to have this, why wouldn't you wait to see it on Netflix? You know, I understand seeing it on a Ziegfeld, which doesn't exist anymore. Now it's a catering space screen, but I don't know. I like the movie, and, you know, I think they did, pun intended, put you in the trenches of World War One, you know, and if you're going to see They Shall Not Grow Old, after you see 1917, you could fast forward through all that 40-minute black and white history of World War One stuff and just go right to the color footage, because you don't need to see the history of World War One if you see 1917. I recommend it. Do you, Bill McCutty?
I just said no, didn't I? I just said you had to go see the documentary instead.
Oh,
right?
Yes, you did. You did. And would you recommend it?
I absolutely do.
I love when you listen, but that hasn't happened yet.
All right,
guys. No. We're going to do our big wrap-up next week.
No, we have other other movies to do.
I wish we had the time. But,
yeah, let's do those next week anyway.
Well, I wanted to talk about The Song of Names, and I wanted to talk about this Paul Rudd Netflix series.
Please, please, please do not go see The Song of Names. It's a big,
Song of Names is great. As a non-Jew who you are, Bill McCutty, maybe you didn't connect to the fact that it's about...
Married to a lovely Jewish woman and have a Jewish daughter, but I still say, because something's true doesn't make it good.
The Song of Names is a very good film, and it's about a kid who during World War II, there was something called the Kinder Transport. And what the Kinder Transport was is when kids were, you know... UK allowed kids, some children to escape Nazi Germany and live out the war in safety, and they were taken in by families. And this kid, who's a 9-year-old violin prodigy, is taken in by this extremely supportive non-Jewish family, and is allowed to get lessons and become even more of a genius than he is. And as we go along, there's another kid in the house who's an only child, and they become kind of like as close as brothers. And then we flash forward to when the kid grows. He's 21 years old. The war is over. He doesn't know if his entire family from Poland was killed during the Holocaust. And he's supposed to give a big concert in, I believe it's London.
Yes.
And he disappears like 2 hours before the show is about to start. In the adult version, the kid who's now was nine, who other actor played him at 21, is now in their 40s, is played by... The snoring sound effect does not come across on the phone, Bill McCuddy. Tim Roth plays the older guy now who's searching for... He disappeared. He's been missing for 20, 30 years. And
Clive Owen, who looks like he's on the cover of a cough drop box with a giant beard, is in this thing for like five minutes.
Okay, well... I think it's a moving, stirring, and beautiful film. The director, Francois Girard, who also made this great movie called The Red Violin, apparently he has a thing for violins, takes the viewer on. It's like this worldwide odyssey, and it's a really,
Is it as long as your description?
Listen, when you find out what the title, The Song of Names, is, if you're not, I'm sorry that you couldn't connect.
If you don't roll your eyes.
No. I won't reveal any spoilers. It's very powerful and moving.
I respect the story, and I think it's a story that could have been told better. That's all I'll say. And I'll say the same thing about Paul Rudd's new series that you like, which is I really couldn't get next to this thing. I tried to like it.
Well, you watched one episode.
I've watched one episode.
Right. I've seen all 8 episodes, and I will tell you that the first episode – let me tell you what this is about very briefly.
I love Paul Rudd, by the way.
Paul Rudd, it's a comedy. There's 8 episodes. It's on Netflix. They're half-an-hour episodes. He is very miserable and unhappy. He's married
– I only wish this was a half-hour episode.
He's married to this woman who she's from Ireland. I don't know. I'll find your name out.
Arthur?
No, Altman?
No, it's not B. Altman. B. Altman. That's pretty funny.
I'm stunned you heard it.
Living With Yourself is the name of the series, and Paul Rudd is upset, and a colleague of his at work says, go to this spa, you'll feel really better, and they wind up cloning him. And they're supposed to, which unbeknownst to him, they're supposed to dispose of the body, and the body isn't disposed of properly. So now there's 2 Paul Rudds walking around. There's the better, improved DNA version
of the Patty Duke show.
And there's the miserable Paul Rudd. And the first episode that you saw, Bill, just sets it up. But it's very clever. They keep doing scenes over and over again from different people's points of view, like Eye of the Beholder. The woman's name is Aisling B, and she's quite good. And Paul Rudd is funny. And I would give it one more episode, Bill McCuddy. If you don't like the second episode, you can stop watching it. But I watched it.
Thank you.
My wife and I binge watched it in 2 sittings, 4 episodes, 4 episodes.
How much time do you have?
Well, you gotta. This is the job. You gotta watch this.
You gotta get a job, Neil. Hey, listen. I'm gonna sign off from Florida, and happy holidays to everyone. And the next time we talk to you, you're gonna hear the best movies of the year, whether Neil thinks so or not, and Bill. And we watched the bad movies, so you don't have to.
Well, there you go. He's got all his catchers. He's going to sign off. I'm going to continue on for one more minute with Bill Bregoli. But you can
I wish I could act surprised.
You can take off. Goodbye, Bill McCuddy. And Bill Bregoli, I don't care what Bill McCuddy said.
All right.
Song of Names is a quite moving
A friend of mine recommended it to me. So
it's quite moving and powerful. I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
If I get
about.
A wife, we'll watch it together. But
they didn't send us that screener, though, which is interesting. They've sent us every screener. So Sony Pictures Classics, who's distributing the film, isn't exactly behind this movie for some particular reason.
Huh.
I like The Song of Names. I like Living With Yourself with Paul Rudd on Netflix. We all liked Little Women, if you like that sort of stuff.
Right.
Except for McCuddy, you'd recommend 1917.
Absolutely. That was one of my top 10.
Yes,
so
1917, I'd highly recommend it. Again, I don't know what he's talking about.
We saw it small.
I'm passing on Cats. I think all 3 of us
are,
too. Star Wars, I think.
I'll give you a quick indication of why I knew Cats was bad going in.
Because it was Cats.
Because it was held at the Landmark Theater in New York on the West Side, and they have a bar there. And before
the Landmark? Where is that?
It's 57th Street and
West
End
Ave.
All the way by the river.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they have a bar there, and they actually offered everyone a free drink at the bar before you go see Cats.
That's funny.
And every time I've been offered a drink before I go see a movie, I know it's a stinker.
There's other reasons. I mean, unless there were technical problems putting this together, they screened this.
There were.
They screened this very late for everybody, yeah. You know what I mean? So if they really wanted award consideration and felt that they had a winner on their hands, I think they would have rushed it through and shown it to people, but they did not show it to people till the very end. And I have no interest in seeing it. And after hearing both of you talk about it, I have very little interest in seeing it as well. And I think we've seen much of everything. I think
that's it. We're done. Yeah, careers are over.
I think that's it. So next week we'll do our best movies and worst movies of the year, close out 2019. And you know, for Bill McCuddy in Florida, who just left us, who you could reach on Twitter at Bill McCuddy, and for Bill Bregoli, who you could reach on Instagram at Bill McCuddy, and for me,
Bill
Rosen,
Bregoli, actually, yeah.
Did I say Bill McCuddy again? At Bill Bregoli. And at me, Neil Rosen, at Neil Rosen Apples on Twitter. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.